Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, June 15th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The African Union's 25th summit sparks debate on the impact of the International Criminal Court's indictments and term limits, which President Mugabe says are not practical.
In America, because it's a vast country, yes, that's where they have two terms. But in Europe, no, it's democracy. If the people still want a leader, let the leader continue.
The defunct Zimbabwe dollar will soon be in the history books as government seeks to phase it out completely.
We started smoothly, and we are ready that this will bring this conversation to finality. It has been pending for a long period of time now.
And hear all sides of the controversy surrounding the botched prayer meeting for missing Itai Dzamara.
First of all, it was actually the resolve for them to allege that they would call off the prayer. Why? Because they actually invited them to December. It was not their brainchild, it was not their project.
The African Union Extraordinary Summit taking place in South Africa has been overshadowed by attempts to detain Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who has been indicted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes. President Robert Mugabe and Zimbabwe, a strong opponent of the ICC, is not a party to the treaty. However, despite efforts to detain him, Sudanese President al-Bashir left South Africa in defiance of a court order for him to remain in the country, a move the High Court has ruled as inconsistent with the Constitution that he must be detained pending a formal request from the ICC.
Meanwhile, in his address to the body, President Mugabe raised many issues that have drawn much attention. The issue of term limits has also come up for discussion. President Mugabe's criticism, President Mugabe criticized some African leaders for not respecting their constitutions, particularly Burundi's Pierre Nkurunziza, who has changed his country's constitution to make himself eligible for a third presidential term. But Mr. Mugabe, though, said the West must not impose term limits on African leaders, adding that if people still want their leaders, they must allow them to continue without limits.
We put a yoke on around our necks. We said leaders must have only two terms. In Europe, they haven't said that. In America, because they are vast, it's a vast country. Yes, that's where they have two terms. But in Europe, no, it's democracy. If the people still want a leader, let the leader continue.
President Mugabe also chastised the West, saying they continue to exploit Africa for its resources and that he will fight the white man till the bitter end.
We will fight the white man. We will fight until the last of us falls naked with nothing. They wish our oil was theirs. They wish our diamonds and gold and all we have by way of underground wealth, all that wealth they wish was their own. How can these natives continue to have that? And when they look at their little island, the little British Isles there, naked with nothing to offer, except now the remains of coal, which they are burning every day. When they look at us and America, which is vast territory, with all those automobiles, the flying ones and the ones that run on our roads, the railways, the trains, they say, the oil we have is not enough, the fuel we have is not enough to sustain us. Not enough diesel.
That was President Mugabe speaking at the African Union. For perspective on President Mugabe's take on term limits, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached out to Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Regional Coordinator Joy Mabenge.
It's a very funny issue that the chairperson of the African Union was implying that it is not good for African countries to restrict the leadership terms for their presidents or heads of state and government to 2 terms, because in Europe, as he said it, they don't do that. But you see, we are trying to entrench our own democracy in Africa, and the issue of the third term or the contestation beyond 2 terms is what is causing conflict in Burundi. In fact, you would understand that it is also part of what may cause serious rifts in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So that flies against the ethos and the face of what we are trying to do as Africans in terms of ensuring that our heads of state and government do not stay for 2 terms, especially 2 terms of be it 4 or 5 years each, and they don't stay for beyond 8 or beyond 10 years, so that we also have fresh ideas coming through. So we found that to be very, very much disturbing, but I do hope that the African Union itself will not get itself into conversations that would go the direction that the chairperson was talking about.
Your take on the Al-Bashir incident?
Well, this is a serious catch-22 situation, Blessing. You see, because South Africa is a signatory to, in fact, is one of the founders of the ICC itself, must be found not to be only embracing the notion of seeing to it that justice is done, but it must be seen to be executing justice itself. So the issue of Al-Bashir really puts pressure on the South African government, but it not only puts pressure, but it also heaps a whole lot of a possibility of a diplomatic fraud if South Africa does nothing to enforce the High Court judgment that says Al-Bashir must not leave South Africa. Well, rumor has it that his jet was seen flying off, and I think that really is going to bring South Africa at loggerheads with the international world, particularly the EU, who have already voiced their concerns, and probably the Department of the Government of the USA or the USA administration. I think it's really putting pressure on South Africa, but I must say in the same breath that what makes this quite complicated is the fact that President Bashir would not have attended the African Union summit if he was not assured by the South African government that he would not be arrested. So it's just going to put South Africa in a seriously messy position, but we wait to see how South Africa will meddle through this one.
A Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Regional Coordinator Joy Mabenge speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Zimbabweans today helped kick off the demonetization process by selling the now defunct Zimbabwe currency to local banks. The process, which will end in September, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe is buying the old currency for up to $2 for some currencies, officially invalidates the old currency, which was ravaged by hyperinflation of up to 500% before the adoption of multi-currencies in 2009. Central Bank Governor John Mangudya tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube he hopes dumping the currency will put to rest speculation of a return of the currency, whose denominations of up to $100 trillion has sold for more than 35 online.
We started smoothly, and we are ready that this will bring this conversation to finality. It has been pending as we said for a long period of time now, and we are quite happy that we are bringing this matter to finality.
So how much money are you looking at? What are your estimates, roughly?
We are estimating that we are going to be spending about $20 million for this exercise.
And you hope that most Zimbabweans will actually surrender that money to you, and that will be it?
The demonetization process means that we are removing the legal status of the lower currency in there. So it means that whoever will be still holding money after the 20th of September, that money won't be valued. And therefore, due to the demand, which is decommissioning of India.
At ePay, there are some people who are looking for such currency. Is it not going to disturb your program?
This is the beauty of demonetization. once you demand, once you demand the currency, it means that currency cannot be sold to the people who are on the coalition. But right now, it's a legal tender. It can't be just sold to the people because that is still a legal tender. So the demandization process is good for everyone, but at the end of the day, those who are selling for those collectors of money, they cannot sell it without being looking at the legality of it or not. So this process is very important to give everyone the power to do what they're doing. Right now, they can't sell something that is illegal to them.
That was Central Bank Governor John Mangudya speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Local banker and former president of the Bankers Association, John Mushayabanu, welcomes the move.
Well, the demonetization started today and will go on until the 30th of September. And I think it has come as a welcome development because people want to put closure to the Zimbabwe dollar chapter and start on a new currency, which is the US dollar currency. And what it also means is that there is now confirmation that we are not going back to the Zimbabwe dollar. Otherwise, they would not have decommissioned the old currency. So the market is excited about it. Bank balances are also being converted into US dollars using the same exchange rate. So once this is done and once we get to the end of it, September, it will put closure to the Zimbabwe dollar era.
What do you think about the rates that are being offered by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, taking into account that some people are actually selling those currencies at very attractive rates, you know, on eBay and other online sites?
The rate that is being offered by eBay is for someone who is buying a souvenir, someone who wants just to display that there was ever a $10 trillion note. And certainly that cannot be the intrinsic value of the Zimbabwe dollar at the time that it was in circulation.
That was John Mushayabanu, a local banker and former president of the Bankers Association of Zimbabwe. Also weighing in, economist Prosper Chitambara says the move is a little late.
It's a natural process that should have been done probably when we adopted the multi-currency regime. Because what normally happens is that when you adopt a different currency as legal tender, you then need to decommission your domestic currency. So I think it's something that was long overdue. It's positive to some extent in that it restores some modicum of confidence in the economy. A number of investors and even Zimbabweans were a bit apprehensive about the possibilities of a full return of the Zim dollar, but at least this process actually is a confirmation by government that at least the multi-currency regime is here to stay.
What do you think could be the response of Zimbabweans towards this kind of request for the old currency?
I don't think it's going to be very overwhelming in the sense that the exchange rate that's being used, it doesn't provide enough incentive probably for people to bring their old Zim dollar notes to the banks.
That was economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Institute of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
A poor attendance in Mashingo and Midlands provinces shrouded the countrywide outreach meetings organized by Parliament's Finance and Economic Development Portfolio Committee. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports on the reason.
Less than 30 people turned up in Mashingo, the provincial consultative meeting, rendering the committee's efforts to have mass input on two draft pieces of legislation, public debt management bill, and the joint ventures bill meaningless. Many residents say there is need for more time to prepare for such meetings. But lawmaker Dorothy Mangami, standing in for Chairman David Chapika, who is moving around the country with another team of the committee, said enough notice was given and residents were also expected to get the bills from Parliament's website and from the Government Gazette, where they've already been published. According to Mangami, it was not Parliament's fault that the attendance was poor at today's meeting.
We've done what we should do as Parliament, in telling the correct institutions to make these invitations. Members of Parliament, they're also aware, everybody is aware.
But city resident and former civil servant Philip Tsaka said, with such little representation of people, the Parliament cannot claim to have held consultations.
It is very bad. We are not happy at all. It is very, very bad. This is poor attendance.
Mashingo United Residents and Red Bears Association Projects Officer, Denis Tirivavitel, Studio 7, that though he attended, he could not make any contribution as he did not have proper notification and knowledge of the content of the bills.
Well, if resources would permit, we would actually love them coming back so that the people of Mashingo can make meaningful contributions.
Such was the opinion of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Young Workers Council Secretary General Godfrey Mutimba.
A parliamentary committee on finance and economic development was actually on a vacation. They came here for a vacation. They were not serious. They were not coming to consult people because they didn't inform the people. The people were not aware of it. That's why there was poor attendance. I think they have to come back to Mashingo and redo this.
The public debt management bill seeks, among other objectives, to establish the public debt management office and put a limit to the amount the government can borrow, as well as compel government to finish Parliament with its debt management activities, guarantees and lending. The joint ventures bill seeks to address the infrastructure gap in the country, currently estimated at $10 billion by the African Development Bank, by mobilizing private sector and foreign finance to finance government projects through joint ventures. The outreach meetings are taking place throughout the country until Friday, when the two teams of the committee will go back to Parliament to enable the views for consideration in the next stage of making them into law. Reporting for Studio 7 from Mashingo, this is Ivan Chifera.
Counter accusations are surrounding the botched prayer meeting planned for missing activist Itai Dzamara Sunday. The Zimbabwe Pastors Fellowship denies trying to hijack the prayer meeting, as alleged by Dzamara's family, which issued a damning statement Sunday. In its statement, the Dzamara family says the prayer meeting was its initiative and the pastors were only invited to the table, but they were acting as if it was their brainchild. The statement also attacked Reverend Fry for collaborating with the police to see that the prayer would not go ahead, an allegation the Reverend denies. Zimbabwe Pastors Fellowship President Reverend Watson Fry responds to the accusations.
I know Dzamara family are in pain. They are in sorrow. Things are not well with Dzamara family, but what I can say, as the man of God, I'm with them. Do you know, I started praying for this family a long time ago. Even this morning when I was praying alone at my place, I even prayed for God to intervene on behalf of this family. I'm not even against this family. It's only our prayer meeting was intervened by the political parties. The politicians, they wanted to take over from the church. So to our side, it was not a good thing.
But the family says that you were just as invited as the politicians that you are saying you were not comfortable working with.
They said that we were also invited.
Yes, that's what the brother said when I spoke with him.
Yeah, they can say that, you know, at a funeral, when someone passed away, the pastor can come. But at the end of the day, you will see the pastor doing everything. When we mention the word prayer, when we mention that we are having to gather to have a prayer and preaching, it means it involves the church.
That was Zimbabwe Pastors Fellowship President Reverend Watson Fry in Harare. We reached out to Patson Dzamara, who signed the Dzamara family statement, who insists the pastors, just like the political parties, were just invited to the prayer meeting.
First of all, it was actually even wrong for them to allege that they would call off the prayer. Why? Because they were actually invited guests to the table. It was not their brainchild, it was not their project. So for them to use the mandate that they were given collectively to then thwart or to then sabotage the prayer, I don't think that was in any way anything that we can smile over. Because it was just a delegated responsibility to say, because since the prayer is the one that's going to apply, I could have simply even applied. Anyone on the table could have applied to the police anyway. But they took that as an opportunity to sabotage a prayer, which I think is unbecoming, is something that has got to be spoken against.
How did they sabotage the prayer meeting? Because we understand that the MDCT also sought permission to host the same prayer meeting at the same venue.
That is not true. Actually, one of the pastors went ahead and wrote an affidavit to withdraw the application. That is the reason why the police did not respond to the initial application.
That was Patson Zamara in Harare. We also reached out to MDCT member Job Sikala, also accused of meddling in the attempted prayer meeting, a charge he denies.
That's absolutely nonsense. Because from the first place, what you have to understand is that at no particular point did I conducted any police service for this prayer. This prayer was organized by the Zamara family, and they wanted a national prayer for one of them who is not with them since his abduction on the 9th of March this year. So for anybody to try to accuse myself to have been involved in any form or other that I conducted any authority to seek permission, so anybody who would say that is a person who is mad.
But your party had also notified the police. Why now attack those who had sought permission?
It's a lie. It's a lie. Our party has never made an application to the police to seek permission for them to hold the Itai Zamara prayer. It was Harare province that applied specifically for that rally, not the party. It was Harare province that wanted to thank the electorate in Harare for heeding the call of no reforms, no elections.
That was MDCT member Job Sikala in Harare.
Winter brings with it a lot of respiratory ailments, such as the common cold and flu, that leave many bedridden and sickly. Doctors are urging citizens to take precautionary measures against such ailments by staying warm and also avoiding exposure by being around other sick people. The chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, Dr. Rutendo Bonde, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye people should avoid having space heaters in their home overnight.
You know, during the winter time, it's a period when we expect more cases of viral respiratory infection, and that usually comes about like colds and coughs and flus. And you know, the first level of treatment is prevention. We're looking at our lifestyle, looking at are we preserving the function of our lungs by being somebody who regularly exercises and, you know, runs and jogs and keeps physically fit. And then we look at our lifestyle and our diet. Have we got enough micronutrients, particularly the vitamin C group and also the zinc and the selenium group, which are also very good at keeping our immunities so that our immunity is less susceptible to respiratory infections. And, we, you know, people always have this misconception that because it's cold, I'm not going to open the windows. But what that means is any of those viral particles and any of, you know, the bacterial spores kind of fester in the homes and in the offices, to always open the windows, let the fresh air in. Those are some of the small tips that we can give. And should somebody then fall ill and is coughing, the important thing is to mind when you cough, to make sure that there is a barrier between yourself and other people, using your hand, using your handkerchief, and then also then proper hand washing thereafter, just to prevent the spread of those viruses and the bacteria.
And also, we've seen that during the cold season, most people would take in heaters into their homes, and some of them the traditional ones. What's your advice when it comes to having heaters in the home, especially overnight?
You know, our traditional heaters, they're based on some coal peas, and there's always incomplete combustion in those cases. And that means that there's carbon monoxide being emitted from those traditional heaters. And carbon monoxide competes with oxygen at the level of the hemoglobin. And so basically we are slowly poisoning ourselves in the to keep warm. And that is fatal respiratory poison, similar to when somebody closes the, you know, the garage door and lets the fumes of the engine fill the garage. And it's not recommended at all. Yes, use the traditional heaters. Use them for a short time. Don't fall asleep while it's still in the house. Remove it and make sure that you aerate the rooms properly so that there's complete combustion and prevention of carbon monoxide production.
But do you think there is enough being done as an awareness program, especially when it comes to the use of heaters like what you've just explained, or more needs to be done?
You know, there's never, you know, information needs to continually go out there, because what we're doing is we're changing the habits, you know, towards more positive and health-seeking aware behaviors, and behavior change takes time. So more messages like this need to go out. Certainly the duty bearers, which are the state and the public health institutions, need to really be in the forefront of saying these messages. We, of course, in private sector, will also continue to do our portion to educate the public and say, you know, these are preventable diseases, these are preventable deaths in the case of carbon monoxide poisoning, and we need to exercise due care.
That was Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, speaking on the line with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Harare.
One of the organizations representing vendors, Queen of Grace Zim Asset Trust, says it will start relocating vendors tomorrow to designated vending sites, although some of the traders have vowed to resist the move. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Queen of Grace Zim Asset Trust Chief Executive Officer Ephraim Chizola told journalists in Harare today that the vendors will be relocated to the western end of the city at Corner Samora Machel Avenue and Chinoy Street.
As law-abiding citizens, we call upon all members of the informal sector and vending community nationwide to support this initiative, as we believe it will go a long way in restoring order. We believe this program has come at a time when the status of our cities, towns, growth points and service centers is in deplorable state.
Chizola said his organization has also set up a revolving fund that will assist vendors to get loans to finance their businesses.
We have since embarked on an exercise of educating our members nationwide on the advantages of supporting this timeless initiative, and would like to assure the Minister of SMEs and the Minister of Local Government that we are fully behind you and have taken a huge step in this regard by mobilizing our Harare membership to host a mega cleanup campaign.
But Samuel Wadzai, director of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, told Studio 7 that all members of his organization should resist this move. He said proper vending sites should be set up first in line with the High Court order, which compelled the government and local authorities to set up vending structures before state security agents remove them from the streets. One of the affected vendors, Gamuchira Ekuriwiri, said she will not heed the Queen of Grace Zim Asset Trust call, as they are paying vending fees to council.
I think that's a very unfair move. I mean, is there anyone who's going to leave town and go downtown to buy whatever vegetables, whatever these guys were selling? No. So I think it's very unfair and inhuman. Where are the jobs they had promised us, the 2.2 million jobs? The reason why we are vending is because we don't have any form of employment.
These sentiments were also echoed by another vendor, Kudzanai Chivije, who said removing street vendors without adequate planning was tantamount to destroying their source of income.
Well, as a vendor, it's something that I won't accept. I'm a qualified technician, but I have got no access to employment, so this is the only way I can feed my family.
Another vendor, Denford Ngadziwore, warned of bloodshed if the attempt to relocate them without their consent goes ahead.
As an individual, we are not going to take that lightly. As a vendor, I'm not privy to even to pay anything to the land barons, so I'm not going anywhere.
Harare City Council spokesperson Michael Chideme told Studio 7 that council would erect structures suitable for vending at the designated vending points in line with the court order, adding that this would be completed before the June 29th deadline set by government for all vendors to have vacated their illegal vending sites. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a good night.